86-year-old Chuck Johnstone finds his balance in the swaying Zodiac before stepping off onto craggy black rocks, slick with seaweed. He takes his wife's hand, and together they pick a path under a cloudy sky spotted with glaucous winged gulls and oyster catchers.
It's been so long since I've been here that it's like coming home.
The Johnstones have come to this remnant of an ancient volcano to get a close-up look at something few others have seen, the nesting seabirds of St. Lazaria Island. Most of the people on this tour have never been on the island, but this is the third trip for Chuck and Alice Johnstone, longtime residents of Sitka. Alice Johnstone remembers their last visit to the island early in the spring. She thought they'd timed their trip to avoid the fragile nesting season, but there were already birds in the burrows.
And it was distressing to step on the burrows and things would squeak underneath our feet. So we decided we'd never come back again. So here we are.
Underground at St. Lazaria, more than 250,000 pairs of storm petrels make their nests. A casual stroll could devastate chicks and eggs hidden in the earth. And while there's no formal prohibition against visiting the island, it is discouraged. But this time, the Johnstones have come on a formal tour, the first of its kind, organized by the Sitka Conservation Society and the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge.
The flying footballs, as we like to call them, are the tufted puffins, and we call them the flying football because they tend to flap their wings really fast and look like they can't really fly at all.
20-year-old Danette Perez is a research intern working on St. Lazaria this summer. In her assumed role as tour guide, Perez leads a small group of visitors through shoulder-high salmonberry bushes to a clearing where dozens of pin flags stick out from the soft earth. Perez kneels down next to an orange flag and pulls out something small, gray, and fluffy.
Okay, so here we have a fork-tailed petrel chick. They're very little, very sensitive, so I'm going to put him back so he doesn't get too starved.
She explains that the parents fly long distances to gather food, and sometimes leave the chicks alone for days at a time. To conserve their energy, they go into a deep sleep where their body temperature drops and their heart rate slows.
So sometimes you'll get a chick that'll be really small, and then the next time you check it, and it's this huge, big, tubby thing, like it's been sitting around with a can of Edie's ice cream just sitting there the whole time, because they have to load up and then they just burn it all off for a couple days until the parents can get back.
In addition to the birds that make their nests underground, this 65-acre island is also home to tufted puffins, thick-billed murres, and pelagic cormorants, a seabird species that makes its nest in the island's steep cliffs. All of that makes St. Lazaria a bird scientist's dream. Since 1994, the island has been the site of a seabird monitoring project run by the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge. Leslie Slater is the lead research biologist.
We're using seabirds as a way to tell us what's happening in the marine ecosystem in terms of its health and overall changes. And it's somewhat indirect, but because seabirds are top predators, they are pretty reflective of what's happening in the ocean in a more immediate sense.
But the data gathered on St. Lazaria is only a small part of a much larger picture. The refuge has 10 monitoring stations that cover more than 3,000 miles from Sitka Sound to the Chukchi Sea, and contribute to data that tracks nearly 40 million birds.
We're learning some very important things by having multiple islands where we monitor. Without St. Lazaria as one very important piece of that scientific puzzle of all this monitoring going on the coast, you would be losing a piece of that story.
That's Lisa Matlock, an education specialist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the agency that manages the refuge. She says while research is part of her agency's mandate at St. Lazaria, she also believes it's time to open the island to a small number of visitors.
It is opening up a can of worms, in a sense, to say we are going to start bringing people out to the island because we are first and foremost there to protect the wildlife. However, it is public land. And so these tours, I think, are that balance, allowing access to a place without damaging the habitat or harassing the wildlife.
Matlock says the centennial tour was so successful that now her agency is considering leading small, supervised tours of St. Lazaria on an annual basis. She says the tours will give people a chance to witness the beauty and the fragility of the island.
I'm the optimist in the office who says that the more that people understand, the more respect they gain for a place by going to it, the more they feel like it is theirs. and they will want to protect it.
The summer sun is low in the sky, and the group gathers back at the water's edge to wait for the Zodiac. Chuck Johnstone looks wistful. He says he's missed the island.
It's just different from anything else. The rocks are different, the shape, the texture of them.
He says this is likely the last time he'll be on St. Lazaria. It's getting hard to walk on the rugged terrain. But he says he's glad it's not easier to come here.
Well, it's nice that there's the inaccessibility that there is, because no matter how much they're impressed by it, and maybe even loathe it a little, if people overran it, it'd be gone.
On St. Lazaria Island, I'm Shalice Haas.
There it is. See, and there they're flying there. There they go.